Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raza Riffs with Keith Raza and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year out there.
And I'm Keith Raza with my trusty sidekick, Alan Lee.
Yeah, bingo.
Alan Lee, man. What a good year, huh, Alan Lee?
I think it was a wonderful year. Excellent, superb.
Yeah. Let me turn on your mic a little louder,
Would
Alan
you please do that for me?
I got talk.
Thank you. It was a great year. I know everyone else out there had some wonderful things happen to them this year and some, quite frankly, some shitty things. That said, I felt I had a pretty good year.
Yeah.
How about you?
I had a great year. I got arrested for drunk driving.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And
I didn't hear about that.
The second I got arrested, I called a lawyer.
Okay.
You know?
Sure.
And I called him, and John Smith, you know, and his phone number is 800, you know, 555 John Smith. And he got me out of a DUI.
Fantastic.
So this episode is brought to you by John Smith.
All right, John Smith. Anyone out there who needs lawyering, just go out and get an attorney, John Smith.
I'm just kidding. There's no such thing as a John Smith. I mean, I'm sure there is. But I wanted to, because I'm trying to get sponsors for us, so I wanted to throw how we'd sponsor it.
We were practicing.
So if John Smith sponsors us, we'll be like, hey, Alan just got in a DUI accident, and he called 1-800-JOHN-SMITH.
We can just make this stuff up.
Yeah.
Because it's Razor Riffs.
Yeah, exactly. And then John Smith will be like, oh, hold, this is cool. I want to sponsor this podcast because, you know.
Well, we hope that's...
People need to get drunk and dial John Smith.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
There's one.
Yeah.
And you know, we were planning on driving for Uber, so it's kind of weird, you know, that we might promote Uber as well for drunk driving. You're drunk. Call.
No. Because Uber's not sponsoring us. John Smith is sponsoring us. Do not call Uber.
No, I meant we wouldn't get Uber as a sponsor.
No. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. My co-host is a little under the weather here.
Just had a little wine.
Call John Smith.
Okay. Good to
you like that?
I think it sounds.
And then
clear.
When John Smith listens to it, he'll be like, "Holy Lord, those guys are smart." I don't know about fucking Alan Lee because he said Uber, but
I'm trying to increase our sponsorship.
If Uber was sponsoring us, I'd be like, "Hey, call Uber."
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Sure.
Right now, ladies and folks, the show is not sponsored, but we're talking to people, and I just wanted to do an example of if the show was sponsored, we'd be like, "Hey, call John Smith."
I think they got it.
They got it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, what to do? Oh, I know. Last week we didn't have a show because it was the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
But the week before we had Bill Dwyer. That was an excellent show.
A blast.
Oh, my God. He was so funny. He was on, too. You know, like, boom, boom, boom.
Just wonderful.
And tonight we have comedy legend Argus Hamilton.
Big time.
Yeah. Argus has appeared on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. That's big.
He has indeed. He goes back to a legendary period in history, in comedy history, with Sam Kinison, Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor, yeah.
He's an icon at the Comedy Store.
Oh, somebody's calling.
Oh.
I don't know why. Well, let me just answer and say, hey, what's up?
It could be our guest.
No, we're calling him. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, my.
Hello. Hi, this is Randy.
Randy.
Hey. Yeah, is this the Melissa Howard show?
Oh, no, it was the last hour.
Oh, sorry about that.
Ooh. I don't know.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay. Right. I'll call back another time.
Okay. All right, thanks,
thank
Randy.
All right,
bye-bye. He probably thought that John Smith, he heard the John Smith.
Yeah.
And that shows you, he might have been, he said, wow, John Smith on the show, and I...
Yeah. Well, John Smith is cool. Well, hey, so Argus Hamilton, before we call him, Argus Hamilton, he's a regular at the Comedy Store on Sunset. He's probably, well, one of the only regulars who's still there from when it was founded. That's pretty cool, right?
I would say so.
And the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, like many people, when you think of the Tonight Show, they think David Letterman.
Jay Leno.
You know? So, but Johnny Carson, he was the one who started it all for the talk shows.
That's a historical name.
Yeah. And he also wrote for Richard Pryor, and he did shows with Richard Pryor, and everyone knows who Richard Pryor is.
Most people do.
All right. So I'm going to call Argus Hamilton on my cellular phone just to tell him that we're about to call him. And then we'll call him on the studio. So, Alan, take it away for 1 second.
You know, I've heard Argus at the Comedy Store, and every time I just burst out laughing.
Hey, Argus, it's Keith.
Because, this is kind of weird. He's calling
me. Good. Did you want me to call you from the other phone? That sounds good. Do you want me to call you back on this number?
Everything is improvised at this show, for those of you out there who want to know what's going on.
Okay, I'm calling you from the radio station, so my phone's going to come up a different number. All right, 1 second.
Wow. You know, this was a little inside stuff we're doing here for the audience about the show. Really, I bet it's really exciting out there. Now, Keith is going to dial Mr. Hamilton's phone, and then he is going to be able to speak with us, correct?
Okay, it's calling.
All right.
There you go. Okay, how does this sound?
Oh, hey, Argus.
Wow.
This one sounds a lot better.
Okay, this is the one we'll use, okay?
All right.
I was afraid the battery would run out on the other one.
Oh, no worries.
This one's plugged into the wall.
Oh, wow.
Are you going to be able...
Anyway, I do have to get out at 8:45, okay?
Yes,
you got
no problem. Thank you.
The show is actually done by 8:45.
So, okay, thanks, Keith.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing the interview,
Thank you,
Argus. It's
thank
a huge
you.
Honor.
It's my pleasure indeed. What's the name of the show?
The show is called Razor Riffs. After my last name, and then we just riffed because we just talk and we don't have, it's unscripted.
Yeah, it's very difficult sometimes.
You know, and this is my trusty sidekick, Alan Lee.
Yes.
Alan was telling me a story about in the car how he asked you to do the podcast last
season.
Well,
I didn't want to.
And you said you were busy.
Well, I didn't.
That probably depends on whenever he said it was.
Yeah.
Did he say it was over the phone and no problem?
I don't know. Did you, Alan?
No, I did not do that. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Well, a couple of times I've been invited to do podcasts at the Comedy Store, and they didn't show up. I'd show up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh dear.
And so, I've done a few of them, but I'm always glad to help you.
This is wonderful.
Yeah,
in fact, I was just hoping that you were just lying in bed. I didn't want him to make any extra effort for this, and that's the truth.
Wait, you were hoping for Argus to be lying in bed?
No, I'm saying that he didn't have to, like, leave and you know, go through any hoops.
Now I know how I sound like when I call chicks a second time. you know, here's one you can have, okay?
Please.
It just seems to me, because I'm past the dating stage, but here's one for you, okay, Keith?
Okay.
All right. It seems to me today that most women are after security. At least that's what they shout whenever I approach them.
That's pretty good.
I just gonna like that.
That's funny. Hey, Arias, we have a question.
I wrote it today, and I figured, well, I'm too handsome for that joke. I better give it to a kid.
A kid who's almost just as handsome as you.
Oh my God.
Okay, well then hand it off to a homely friend who needs an opener. Okay?
There you go. There you go.
What? No, I was saying we're good. I'm good. I'm almost. I think I.
You're
I
mean, vain. He's vain. Very vain.
Yeah, I'm vain. Yeah,
just you know, he just
okay.
Gave
well,
a good joke.
You know who I mean. Find somebody that will owe you a favor, okay, and give them that joke. They can open with it.
Oh, okay, excellent, Alan. I give you that joke.
No, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Let me do my hair and my teeth.
Hey, Argus, we wanted to ask you about your jokes because you're the funniest guy on Facebook because. You know, you post so many jokes. Do you write all those jokes that day, or do you like?
Well, it's all because I have an obligation to a whole string of newspapers that I have to write 13 jokes a day.
Jeez.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Yeah.
To fulfill my obligation to all these newspapers that take my column as a daily monologue, kind of like Johnny Carson's monologue used to be.
Yeah.
Today's late night monologues tend to be slanted politically one way or the other.
Yes.
Johnny was essentially and faithfully neutral. And so I'm that way as well. I like to kid both sides.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, don't really have a dog in the fight. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I'm sort of a Tory.
And
that is, I believe we should ask Queen Elizabeth to forgive us and take us back.
Like you say, six clicks to the right of Rush Limbaugh.
Well, I just think that's so amazing because, like, it's hard for me to write 13 jokes a week and you do it a day. Like, that's just...
Well, the whole key is just to pile up a bunch of facts or stuff that's going on in the news or things you've noticed about yourself lately.
Yeah.
And then turn off the radio, turn off the TV set, and concentrate. And you can do it.
Yeah.
All my jokes are three-sentence jokes. Mm-hmm. The classic setup, premise, setup, punchline, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like for instance, one I wrote today that I'm going to open with tonight, Entertainment Weekly noted how Hollywood stars are becoming more outspoken about their spirituality. Not everyone's on the same page, Keith. This past weekend, Kim Kardashian announced she's writing a book about strength. It's a tribute to the capacity of yoga pants to withstand anything.
Oh, that's funny.
So it's basically, so if comics are listening, every joke basically has three elements to it: the premise, the setup, and the punchline.
Yeah.
And then after that, for any listening comics, the great David Brenner had the best line about where you are in this country and how to tell the joke. You want to hear it?
Yes.
David Brenner used to say every joke has three elements: premise, setup, punchline, the A, the B, and the C. David Brenner said, if you're in New York, you tell the crowd the A and the C, and they laugh. If you're in Chicago, you tell them the A, the B, and the C, and they laugh. But in Los Angeles, you tell them the A, you tell them the B, you let them know a C is coming, then you tell them the C, and they laugh.
Yeah. That's like really good advice, though, because like when I do the road and stuff, and in those three cities, that works. But like, if you do like Arizona or something, it seems like they just want the B and the C. Like they don't really care about the A.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Just cut to the chase. Is that it?
Yeah. So, but I mean, those are my favorite types of jokes. The, you know, the premise, the setup, and the punchline. Just boom. You know, because I think, like I always thought the perfect joke is where the setup and the punchline is identical. You know,
oh yeah, well that's the fastest, yeah.
Yeah, so those
are... But you run out of stage time pretty fast just doing that.
That's true. That cuts some time there.
But
you gotta walk the dog between the punchlines, you know.
So,
how did you find crowds in Arizona? Do they watch the news more than they do in L.A.?
I don't know. I don't really do news jokes when I do stand up. I just talk about myself. So
yeah.
I mean, why, you want to open for me or something?
No, I really wondered about, I was guessing that Arizonans watch the news a lot more. What I find is that people in L.A., they know pop culture backwards and forwards.
Yes.
They know everything
yes.
that's been on, what's TMZ.
Yeah.
They know everything that's been on TMZ and Entertainment Tonight.
Exactly.
Yeah. I agree with that.
But whenever I go east of L.A., I notice they know everything that's been on Fox News.
Yeah, they know like who's the number one criminal and all that stuff.
Well, there's also politics on Fox News, not just news stories about criminals.
Well, yeah.
But then I guess some politicians are criminals.
Well, mostly in like Arizona, the jokes are – they really like jokes about Arizona. They don't like a lot of California jokes.
Well, Texas.
You
know, really?
Yeah.
Is that a little bias?
It's not biased. It's just Arizona thinks that –
No. It's called a dry hate.
Yeah. Dry hate. Exactly. Like if you just talk about Phoenix, they'll love you. They'll be like, Phoenix.
Oh, yeah. But not Ohio or
– No, they'll be like – what's Ohio? And then you're like, oh, it's a state. They're like, oh, yeah.
Well, here's a tip for you. Back in the 1920s, when Will Rogers was doing his one-man show all across the country, and it was all booked up and sold out ahead of time. He was the highest-paid comedian in the world. But the first thing he would do when the train would pull him into town is he would go to the barber shop, and he would get all the gossip on the mayor, the town council, all the civic and local issues, and he would go on stage that night and do open with 10 minutes about whatever local town he was in, and he'd have a meeting out of his hand.
Wow. That's funny that you...
That's great.
That's funny that you mention Will Rogers, because didn't Robin Williams compare you to Will Rogers?
Yeah, Robin and I were really close friends. Will and my grandfather were very good friends.
Yeah.
They were raised together in Indian Territory back
wow.
when... Really Indians. It was just Confederate veterans and their families who had fled the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. Will and my... Will's father and my great-grandfather had fought in the Confederacy together. And so they were raised together. And they were very good friends. And Robin didn't even know that.
Wow.
And,
isn't that amazing?
So I'm very honored. I've got a joke about him whenever you criticize the government,
mm-hmm.
you better watch out. Will Rogers once said that we have the best government that money can buy. And the next thing you know, he died in a mysterious plane crash.
Oh.
Ouch. That's a little dark.
Yeah. That's,
well, we're not here to play softball.
True.
That's true. That's very true.
Oh, God. That's funny. we're not here to play softball. Arias, so you did the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. What was that like?
Well, it was the biggest deal in the world back in the 80s. I did it about 29 or 30 times, but
yeah.
my first time was after 3.5 years of developing at the Comedy Store Westwood. I came out right out of college, out of the University of Oklahoma in March of 76, and Mitzi saw me two or three times on open mic night, and we were lucky back then because the Comedy Store Westwood is where she would send all the baby boomers over to develop.
Mm.
And I found myself in 1976, Keith, with a pledge class of Robin Williams, Michael Keaton, Arsenio Hall, Marsha Warfield, Bob Saget, Mike Binder, unbelievable array of talent. Sandra Bernhardt. All of us were kids. I mean, we're 20, 21 years old and on stage together every single night with this campus crowd at UCLA. And so we developed pretty quickly. During this time, Mitzi would have all her New York comics and the older guys up at the Sunset Store. And so we were able to develop at warp speed because we were performing in front of our peers and they gave us tremendous, feedback and support. So after only 3.5 years, I was ready for my first Tonight Show shot in January of 80. And the way it's different now is that back then the whole country watched Johnny. Everybody who was up back during the three network era, Keith, stayed up and watched Johnny. You would have 30 to 40 million people watching his show every night, like
yeah.
the whole country. And more importantly, guys, all of show business. Everybody who was anybody, all the power brokers, the head agents, managers, and network executives all watched The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And so when you, the classic thing is, you've had 3.5 years to come up with this 7 minutes, and you do it, your knees are shaking, you've dreamed all your life of this moment, and you go out, and you discover, Keith, Johnny was not raised in the nightclubs. Get this, the front row is 40 feet away from the star you're standing on. And there's three cameras between you and the front row.
Wow.
So what you immediately do as a survival task is that using the ABC, how to tell the joke, premise, setup, punchline.
Yes.
You figure out that everybody in the crowd is looking at the monitors anyway. So what you do is you play the left camera for the premise, the right camera for the setup, and then, boom, the punchline right to that middle camera. And that crowd would react just like they were a regular front row. You know what I mean?
That's great advice, actually.
Wow, that's great. Broke it down.
And, yeah, remember the first thing Jay Leno did when he took over The Tonight Show was change the entire studio and bring it up to where he was standing right on top of the crowd.
Yeah.
Well, that's why.
Wow. See,
and Johnny didn't know any better because that studio had been built in the mid-1950s for all these great variety shows, from Red Skelton, Jack Benny, and Your Show of Shows, all these I mean, not your show of shows, but a lot of West Coast variety shows were in those studios, and you didn't need the front row up close then.
Yeah. See, I just think it's just amazing because, like, a lot of comedians, like, right now, like, especially the younger crowd, they're like, oh, we just want to get on Conan or, you know, something like that. But, like, when I started doing comedy, I only had to get on Letterman. But that can't happen now. But I know, like, I'm good friends with Norm Macdonald, but he always wanted to do Carson. So it's funny how, like, that's, you know what I mean? How that's...
Well, you instinctively pick the guy,
yeah,
you know, that's the man. And you pick the right guy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And Johnny Carson, yeah, I think, is the best talk show ever because he was the first one who actually brought it like that.
Yeah.
So.
And he was absolutely the king. And... what it was like, though, was with the whole country watching, everything happened after your first kill.
Yeah.
I mean, everything. I'd come to the Comedy Store the next afternoon. Well, first of all, we went over to Mitzi's house that night and partied and celebrated because Johnny not only introduced me, not only did I, thank God, kill the crowd, but Johnny got up, walked over, and shook my hand.
Wow.
Right there in the middle of the stage. And the place just went wild. And the next morning, or well, we go over to Mitzi's house, and about 20 of us, we just party until 6 in the morning. And after about 2 hours sleep on the couch there in Mitzi's bar, I walk down Doheny. Now, here's the difference. I'm still in my white suit. It's January 9th, 1980. And as I'm walking down Doheny over to Sunset for about a half mile to Palm Avenue, where I go down to my apartment, cars on their way to work are honking and waving at me and saying, great show last night. You were great. Fantastic.
That's awesome.
I mean, it was the most unbelievable moment of triumph. The moment of triumph was walking home from Mitzi's the next morning.
Yeah.
When you realize how many people watched that thing. And then after a good day's sleep, I went to the Comedy Store that afternoon about 2:30 or 3, Keith. And back then they had, you know, these while you were out pink messages, you know, at the switchboard. I had 25 messages from agents and managers and network executives and Universal also wanting meetings with me.
Oh, that's good. Did you?
It, I mean, the whole country watched that.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I heard you were trying to get your own TV show a few years ago. Did that ever, like, was that, did that come from one of those meetings?
Well, what they all threw sitcoms at me. I turned down 36 of them because I just wanted to host a show and do a nightly monologue on the news.
Yeah.
But so I'm just racking up the Tonight shows with that in mind, turning down all this other stuff, and I still know I did the right thing because the last thing I needed back then was $50,000 a week with my cocaine habit. So.
Oh,
yeah. So what happened was by about the mid-80s, and it was time to really step up, it was time for me to get well.
Yeah.
And Mitzi Shore and Johnny Carson both at the same time gave me ultimatums. You know, that if I didn't get well, I didn't have the Tonight Show, and I wasn't going to have the Comedy Store. Huh. And so I went to the Betty Ford Center in 86. And while that was happening, Jay and David, of course, cornered who's going to replace the great Carson in two different ways. And so by the time I got out of rehab and got, you know, my feet back in to the game, I was offered the Fox Late Show following Joan Rivers' disaster. And Arsenio helped me get that bid.
Yeah.
But it didn't work out.
Oh, that's...
So I wound up going the newspaper route. And, you know, been killing at the Comedy Store every night ever since.
Yeah, that's where I've seen you at the Comedy Store like 5 or 6 times. And I actually met you for the first time a few weeks ago when I asked you about the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you always made me laugh. But like when I watch your stand-up, I just think, oh, this guy would be a great host for a show like The Tonight Show or something. So
well, what I'm doing is right now, Keith, thanks a lot. The legendary TV producer George Slaughter, who was the famous producer of Laugh-In back in the 60s and 70s,
mm-hmm.
as well as Real People in the 80s and all these Sinatra specials. He's like the head of Beverly Hills Society. and he has a huge production company on Beverly Boulevard that does commercials all day. And he's always been in my corner. He had me and Robin on his show in 1977, the new Laughing Show. I did the news, and Robin did sketches on NBC.
Yeah.
And he's going to produce a TV pilot. We're going to go to the Golf Channel with it. It's called Lord Hamilton. And Lord Hamilton, I'll go out and I'll give the Tory version of the news, jokes, you know, and then interview celebrities who play golf or funny golfers.
And
for the hour.
Could totally see that. I mean,
And I'll be standing in front of a portrait of Queen Elizabeth and Arnold Palmer, for the king and the queen.
But hey, at least you'll get your goal, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, the whole idea is to bring new viewers to the Golf Channel, and to have a place where I can really joke about the news from a Tory perspective.
Yeah,
and it's sort of an Episcopalian Methodist perspective that hasn't really existed in the nightly monologue since Johnny retired.
Yeah,
no, it hasn't, has it?
No, but that's cool that you're going to bring it back on the Golf Channel.
Yeah. So. Well, we got to sell it, but you both. I think you know I'm ready. I think I've had enough seasoning.
No, I'm serious. I'm bummed that you never got this chance to host because I think you'd be a great host on a Tonight Show or something like that.
Well, I appreciate it, but the people can come see me at the Comedy Store every night, and I get up there and give the same amount of time. And I have just as much fun, trust me.
Yeah, that's true.
And
it's a big
and crime. You know what? I don't have a house to pay for. I don't have divorced wives to pay for. I don't have kids to put through private school. It's worked out really nice for Lord Hamilton, let me tell you.
Now, Arias, I have a question. You were doing the Comedy Store with Richard Pryor and Sam Kennison. Yeah. You have any cool stories about those two? Because they're comedy legends.
Well, yeah, I've got a couple of them for you. First of all, Richard Pryor, there has never been a hotter comedian on this planet than Richard Pryor back in the mid to late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was that Richard was a very naturally funny impressionist. He was Richie Pryor in the 60s. And he started getting better and better, started doing TV, just naturally funny. Everybody loved him. And he kind of cracked up on stage in Las Vegas in 71 and wound up at this brand new Comedy Store in 1972, where he met the great Paul Mooney. And Paul Mooney turned Richie Pryor, the cute impressionist, into Dark Twain.
Wow.
Okay? And I mean, it was all a metamorphosis. It was a collaborative effort between the two of them. And Richie got so good so fast that he was actually the one they wanted to play the lead in Blazing Saddles. But the Warner Brothers wouldn't sign off on him because they knew he did coke.
Yeah, wow. I heard something like that, yeah.
Each idea.
Oh, that happened. So Mel Brooks threw a writer's gig at Richard, and they sat around the writer's table and did coke the whole time they wrote the movie. If you want to know why it's so funny and fast. So anyway, Richard then came out, I think in 75, with his famous album, That Nigger's Crazy. And it captured the college kids.
Yeah.
And I mean, college kids played that album over and over and over. And he became a cult hero off of that album. When he took the fearful, dreaded N-word, just like they did in Blazing Saddles, and turned it into slang that exists in rap music to this day. And I'm telling you, when he would go on stage, he loved to do new material. And he loved to churn out new albums.
Mm-hmm.
And so once a year, Richard Pryor would have a show at the Comedy Store Sunset, like in 76, 77, 78, and 79. He would have the 10 o'clock show. He would have his own 10 o'clock show. He would have David Letterman open, Marsha Warfield go in the middle, and then he would go on for about an hour and a half and work out new material every night. And the room would be jam-packed to the rafters.
Wait, did this every night or once a year?
For about 3 months at a time.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and the Comedy Store would be the hottest place on this planet. Mitzi had meanwhile purchased the entire Comedy Store in 76, so we had a main room as well. But Richard loved that original room.
Uh-huh.
So in 1977, after his second album, he got a deal with NBC to put on six specials right in a row to compete with Monday Night Football. And so Richard got Robin and me and Marsha Warfield and Sandra Bernhardt, and Alan Bursky, David Tyree, a whole bunch of us baby boomer comics to be the sketch, you know, actors on the show. And we put together these six epic shows on NBC, and it was some of the funniest stuff you've ever seen. You can still Google the Richard Pryor specials on NBC and see the To Kill a Mockingbird sketch, to see some of the roast of Richard Pryor. It was just incredibly funny stuff. Richard Pryor played the first black president in one of the sketches, giving a press conference. It was so outlandish back then that it was considered a hilarious premise for a sketch.
Argus, we have a Twitter question for you, because what I do is I promote the show on Twitter and Facebook, and I get questions.
Yeah.
So we have a Twitter. Are you cool answering a Twitter question?
Yeah. You want me to finish the Richard Pryor story?
Finish the Richard Pryor story, yeah.
I just want to say that he would take us all over to his house on Saturday nights, and we would party at his house in Northridge. And, you know, wake up like 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon when Richard was in his worst shape of all.
Yeah.
I said, my line about Richard back then is, on Sunday afternoons, you never knew if Richard, you know, was going through cocaine withdrawal or if he just really hated cats.
That's funny. Really hated cats. I really hate cats, too. They're like, you know.
Yeah.
But, so Twitter question for Argus Hamilton. Argus, who is your favorite comedian working today at the Comedy Store?
My favorite comedian working today, I have two of them. One of them is Bill Burr.
Ooh, ooh, yeah.
When I get to work with him in La Jolla, we just blast the roof off of that room. We have a Comedy Store La Jolla that may be, well, it's easily the best acoustic room I ever played.
Mm.
And Bill just creates a way there. And Bill makes me laugh. He is funny.
Yeah.
And the other comedian that really makes me laugh, that's really, really smart, is Kirk Fox.
Kirk Fox.
We want him on it.
Yeah, Kirk is a tennis player out of San Diego, and he's done a few TV series, and he's about to star in a CBS cop show starting this week or next week called Rush Hour.
Yeah.
He's going to be one of the co-stars on it.
Yeah.
And he is funny.
Oh, well, Kirk Fox, I mean, he's hysterical. He opens up for Kevin Nealon a lot.
Yeah,
and I'm a huge Kevin Nealon fan, so I got to know.
Me too.
Yeah, so I got to.
Yeah, Kevin developed out at the Improv while we were up at the Comedy Store. He's as funny as it can be.
Yeah,
Kirk had a great opener. He just came up with it the other week. He said how great it feels when you get a beautiful girl's phone number. You know how great it feels when you get her number. You know, he was at the dog park. He got it off her dog tags.
I love it because
he's hilarious.
Yeah, because Kirk's a writer too, you know, and he makes.
Oh
it,
yeah,
yeah, quite a writer. And, yeah, as Argus is as well.
Yeah, those are my favorite type of comedians, ones who like write a lot. Like, see, that was another question I had for you, Argus. You write so many jokes. Do you ever like write jokes for other comedians, or did you ever do that?
No, I don't have that much time to interact with other comedians.
Yeah,
I have to leave the Comedy Store right after my set, get home and get to bed, because I wake up at 6:30 in the morning and I have to run 8 miles a day. And you know, I'm very active in recovery in West Hollywood and Beverly Hills. 29 years sober now.
Yeah, well,
and so I've got things to do all day.
Congratulations,
that's great.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Beverly Hills AA is great. it's the most beautiful women in town, and I can tell you, and the youngest women in recovery because they got the cocaine for free.
Oh my God, that was funny.
So there was no pacing for them. They had to get well by the time they were 22, or else.
Argus, do you have any advice for a comedian on how to become a regular at the Comedy Store now versus how to become a regular at the Comedy Store in the 70s and the 80s?
Yeah, back in the 70s and 80s, it really wasn't up to you. Mitzi would take one look at you and determine your charisma.
Uh-huh.
If you had charisma, she would do anything for you. She would send you over to Westwood and develop you. If you showed that sparkle on stage, that's all she looked for. She didn't look for laughs. She looked for personal sparkle.
Okay.
And I guess that's a spiritual thing inside of everyone that's either on or off that night. We both have had it on. We both have had it off. But once she saw it, she would do anything for you. And it was a very important time because so many talented baby boomers were turned off of politics by Watergate and the Richard Nixon scandals. So instead of going into politics, a lot of public personalities went straight into stand-up. And here we were. There was 70 million baby boomers graduating from college. And there were four or five comedy clubs, three in New York and two in L.A.
Mm.
So making it through that open mic night, you know, was the most important thing you would do in your life until you did your first Tonight Show shot.
Yeah.
Today, it's completely different. In the old days, what you did was you worked hard at the Comedy Store. You did slots at the Comedy Store so you could go on television. Today, you have to go on television in order to get on at the Comedy Store.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's completely flipped. Because there's 409 scripted TV shows now on television. I read that the other day. And not to mention all the variety shows and talk shows. I mean, Keith, you could be the second lead on a sitcom, and I wouldn't know you.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so many channels. And yet, back when I started in 76, there was a national debate over whether the fourth lead on the Mary Tyler Moore sitcom, Ted Baxter, should have a girlfriend, Georgette. A national debate. Fourth lead on a sitcom.
So, are you trying to say you don't watch my sitcom?
I'm trying to say...
I'm just kidding.
There's not enough people to watch anything right now to really launch you into stardom. It's all up to your publicist now.
Yeah.
You have to have... The publicist is the most important thing in show business right now. Because anybody and everybody can be on TV.
That's true. That's true. The thing is, though, like, I don't have any desire to do TV. I just want to do stand-up, you know, like, and my favorite comedians are always at the Comedy Store too, and I've opened up for a lot of them too. And they're like, "We can't get you in. You got to go through ropes and open mics."
Well, then I would suggest to you that you find a particular favorite stage in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
What you do is, have you got an agent yet?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, you have your agent hook you up with Showtime or Comedy Central, and no matter what, get that Comedy Central or Showtime or HBO special.
Yeah.
That 30-minute thing. And if you get that, then you get your foot into the Comedy Store.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm hoping to do.
Sounds like great advice.
Here's what you do. You stop hoping. And you sit down tonight, and you write down the things you're going to do this year, and you say by when you're going to do them. And you let that piece of paper be your boss. Everything else is just a wish.
Wow.
Because you can fritter away year after year after year in this business by simply saying, I'm going to do that pretty soon. And pretty soon becomes last year. You have to write it down. Commit it to paper. The five goals, if they're personal, professional, spiritual, you know, whatever they are, write those goals down that you have. And not only write them down, but write a date down by the time you need to get it done. Because if you'll write that date down, the clock starts ticking. And the thing that makes you a good stand-up in the first place, Keith, your competitiveness, finally starts working for you. Because you have a balance inside you of your ferocious competitiveness balanced by your innate sloth, okay?
Yeah.
And they're always teeter-tottering, you know, if you're an artist, that's the way it is, okay? But if you commit yourself to paper and you have that paper where you can see it every day, that competitiveness in you will win, and you'll figure out ways to do it.
That's what I'm going to do. That's great advice, because I always make New Year's resolutions and stuff. And, like one of my New Year's resolution last year was, you know, obviously be a regular at the Comedy Store, Laugh Factory, and the Improv. I nailed two out of those three. So
yeah, you know. Okay, then to make the Comedy Store your goal, and I've just given you a good way to do it.
Yeah. So
the whole idea is in our business as comedians is to achieve these goals so we can attract the wrong women and screw up our lives and give us more material.
I like that. That's great.
Well, we only have five more minutes left. Alan, do you have any questions for the great Argus?
No, I've seen Argus perform often at the Comedy Store, and I just love his stuff. And
well, thank you very much, Alan. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome, and I love what you say that you're part of the lineage of Alexander Hamilton, but then, you know, Alexander Hamilton could not be funnier than you. He was a banker.
Well, yeah. Well, he was the black sheep of the family because he fought for the rebels.
That's right.
We were all Tories.
That's right. Oh, that's a great...
He's a cousin of mine. He's the Ambassadine line. I say on stage that we royalists, my line of Hamiltons, we're from a dukedom, the Dukedom of Abercorn. We lost the English Civil War. We lost the American Revolution. We lost the American Civil War. And in the war on drugs, I fought for Colombia.
That's so great.
Wow. Oh, that's interesting that you're related to Alexander Hamilton, because I've always said he's one of the greatest minds in history. You know,
you were fed such a line of bull about American history. Hamilton was the biggest monarchist of all.
What? Yeah.
All the founding fathers were monarchists. What they were petitioning George III was to just rule directly over the colonial legislatures. No parliament. That's what the original charter said, guys. And so when we finally win the independence, Hamilton takes over the 1787 convention, and they wind up giving the president of the United States more power than any English king had had since Henry VIII.
Yeah. Well, I was just kidding. I don't think he's the greatest mind in history.
Take that back.
I take that back. I just love the $10 bill. Like, that's the only
reason. Oh, yeah.
That's the only reason why I said
it. It rolls up nicely, doesn't it?
It does. Well, Argus, thanks so much.
Oh, this was great.
We have one last question. If you could just nip it real fast, I'd appreciate
it. Okay.
Do you like the roast battles at the Comedy Store?
I go home before those start, but the kids love it, and I recommend all the millennials in L.A. to go see that roast battle on Wednesday night. The kids have the time of their life up there.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Argus. I really appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me on your show.
We look forward to seeing you.
And say hi to me, Alan and Keith, when you see me at the store, all right?
I certainly will, Argus.
We will.
Okay, good luck to both of you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Argus.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That, my friend, that, was in the can, and I just was blown away.
That is an interview, ladies and gentlemen. Holy Lord.
I mean, you know, he gave about $1,000 worth of comedy advice.
Oh, my God.
In about 10 minutes. You know, half these people out there don't even say
the Tonight Show advice. The writing, the jokes, the... difference
going
between
different cities,
you know. Obviously, you know, he had to rush it a little, but
he's headed. No, ladies,
wow.
Why don't you tell the folks that?
Oh yeah, he's headed at the Comedy Store
right now.
His set is at 9 o'clock, so
well, just a bit after nine. But get there, go ahead.
Yeah, so turn off the channel, man, and go see Argus.
Yeah, if you're in the area,
wow, that was
get over there now.
That was like a dream come true, because Argus is probably one of the only living comedians right now. Still doing stand-up in the 70s, still rocking it now. And not he gave us great advice on TV, how to get in the Comedy Store now, stuff like that. The advice where he said make a note?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm fucking doing that.
You know what? Look at my note right here.
He put it on a Walmart.
No, this is the McDonald's that we just ate about 17 hamburgers there.
But man.
No, he's right about that. He's 100% right, man.
That was awesome. I'm just so shocked, because it was like...
Well, he actually told us early history of the Comedy Store and what they went through together.
Yeah, and he made me feel like an idiot for saying I liked his cousin. But wow, that is an interview. You know what I mean? sweetest guy too.
Like, oh, just a gentleman,
and just so fast. Oh, you know,
total cool guy.
Like, if you're a stand-up comedian, I'm sorry, I'm blown out words because there's not a lot of interviews that just like usually I have something else to say.
Yeah, you do.
And I'm just
sometimes you don't.
Yeah, I'm just like, wow.
No, listen, you know what I was going to mention? I forgot this, you know, and I bet you'll agree with me on this. Argles Hamilton is one of the few comedians out there that dresses so well.
Oh, yeah. That's what I wanted to ask him.
I swear, he's such a classy dresser. He'll come up and everyone afterwards.
He dresses in a suit. And
looking good.
Yeah.
And then someone comes in there in a T-shirt and, like, you know, a hoodie and, you know, their pants are up. You know, with the crack showing.
So yeah, well, not always. You know.
He's class.
Oh, yeah. You know, David, though. David said that Argus was one of those people who should have been the Tonight Show host.
Oh, yeah. That goes without saying.
I agree, man. Yeah,
that goes without saying. And, you know, it's his show, though. He's got that golf.
That's going to be interesting.
That sounds hilarious.
It sounds hilarious, but see, I mean, I don't know anything about golf, so I
but
probably...
But you have done some caddying. Don't say that, because you did some caddying with your uncle, and so you know your way a little around.
Yeah, but I don't know anything about the sport. Like, yeah. I don't know how
You don't play golf. Yeah. You don't get out and swing every day. And...
You want to hear a golf story?
Okay.
So my...
All right.
We got 7 minutes to kill. And
we're going to try to kill it.
Yeah, we're going to kill it. Okay, so here's a golf story.
Okay.
This doesn't really involve me. It involves my Uncle Ed. So my Uncle Ed and I were at the Patrick Warburton Celebrity Golf Tournament. And Patrick Warburton, as you know, is my adopted uncle.
Yeah.
And he does a comedy competition every year. And they're celebrities. So we were assigned to guard the hole-in-one plate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like hole 15 or something like that. And it was like the longest hole in the drive. Okay. And... if you got a hole in one, you get a free car, like a free brand new car. Okay, it's really hard to get a hole in one.
Sure.
I mean, like it's I think Tiger Woods has maybe 9 his entire career. Mm-hmm. Like it's that hard. So, me and Uncle Ed are just talking to all the celebrities, you know, that are coming by.
Sure.
Blah blah blah, and then Dr. Gadget comes in. Okay, and Dr. Gadget is a celebrity because he's invented gadgets.
Sure,
you know. And I don't really know much about him, but I know that's his claim to fame, you know. Oh, I invented a watch, you know, something like that. So Dr. Gadget is about to hit the ball, and Uncle Ed and I are talking, and we're just talking about girls, you know. And Uncle Ed's like, so yeah, Jennifer Love Hewitt has a nice rack, you know. And I was like, oh, yeah. And he's like, Uncle Ed just makes me laugh, you know. He's not a comedian. Sure. And he's just saying stuff, you know, because it's so ridiculous on how to get the hole in one. So Dr. Gadget hits it, and it was the worst shot ever. Like, the ball went in the pond. And then my Uncle Ed's like, hey, Dr. Gadget, since I was talking, I'll let you hit one more time. And if you make it, we'll count that as the hole in one.
Sure.
You know, since I was being rude. And so Dr. Gadget turns to us, and he's like, thank you. I'll take you up on that offer. You were being rude. And Uncle Ed's like, I know. So Dr. Gadget hits the ball again. And I swear to God, the hole is right here, and the ball hits maybe 5 feet from the hole in one. Like, it never happens. And my Uncle Ed was, like, panicking. He was like, thank God that did not go in. Because the goal was not to give the car, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So he was just panicking the whole time. He's like, did you see how close that was? Well, you know, and Dr. Gadget was like, that's a shot. And, but that's a story. It's not really that funny, but, you know, whatever.
Well, you're making a point about how hard golf is.
Oh, yeah. It's very, very
hard. And how
hard.
You could lose or win a car.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Well, Alan, why don't you tell us about next week, since I won't be here. I'll be at the Brea Improv with Jeff Richards.
Yes, indeed. Well, next week.
This will be the Alan Riffs show.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting, even for me. Yeah. Well, we have a guest, I'm hoping, and that the gentleman's name is Ron Lynch, and we will see. He should be here. And it's going to be a blast.
Oh, he's coming in the studio or he's calling in?
You know what? As of now, he's going to be calling in.
Oh, okay.
And
how come, I get it that this is Sherman Oaks, but how come no one likes to go to the studio? So far, Bobby Slayton's the only one who likes to go to the studio.
I don't know.
And I gave him the wrong fucking address. I don't remember that.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe that's why. I don't know. But I'll tell you, I thought about it. Think about it. If you're lying in your bed or at home and sitting there munching and drinking and whatever, I don't see the problem of calling it in. Maybe that we're starting a trend.
Oh, yeah. Calling it in is great. I just, you know, lying on the bed, I think you should probably lose that line.
Well, I don't know, because I lie in the bed often, just talking to people and stuff.
Do you lie on the bed when you talk to me on the phone?
No. No, I definitely, when I talk to you, I try to get up and walk around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because the second you lie on the bed when you talk to me, hang up. Conversation over.
Yeah, well, I'm here next week, ladies and gentlemen, and we will see. And it should be a very interesting show.
And it's going to be great. And tonight...
We had a great time.
Tonight...
As always.
I told Alan in the car, tonight is probably going to be the most interesting episode, and it totally was. It was just...
It was.
Like, this is an episode where, like... I'm probably going to listen to every single day until I reach my goals. This is a comedian hero of so many comedians.
That's correct.
And he's telling you, don't hope, do it.
That's a big part of this.
Like, that's like a motivational, you know.
Well, you know what? Do you hear that part where he said that it's a battle for all artists between the lazy sloth and the competitive artist that wants to do what he has to do in a sloth?
Yeah. Wow.
That hit me pretty hard.
I'm just...
Because the sloth, I always give in to the sloth. You don't. You're the competitive. You're very good. I get by when I get revved up.
It's always...
But you are just a... You're really competitive. You say, you know, the contest, I'm getting out there and doing the roast, you know.
I'm pretty competitive, yeah. I don't like to be, but I am.
You are.
Because
I can be, but only if I'm like, my back is to the wall.
Well, you know what it is? Is I'm like... I'm very competitive because, you know, I've been pushed down so much in my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it just, you get tired of being second best. So I think the competitiveness in me, because like I'm Rudy, you know what I mean? Like
sure.
I don't win, but I just keep coming back up.
Yeah, sure. Like, you know? Rocky.
Yeah, like Rocky.
Like Rocky Balboa.
Rocky won in the second
but
one.
But he did finally.
Yeah.
Adrian.
The director's given us the light, so we got to cut things short.
God, that's the light.
Man. That was a great episode. All right.
Hey, everybody.
So tune in next week with Alan Lee. I'll be at the Bray Improv with Jeff Richards. Once again, follow Argus Hamilton on Facebook. He's more on Facebook than Twitter.
And read his jokes.
Read
he puts them up.
Newspaper
they're
jokes.
They're a hoot.
Just, 13 a day.
13, they're just, they're dying.
Wow.
We read some at the...
13 new jokes.
Yeah.
Wow. Holy Lord. And he's up by 6 to run 8 miles. And he lives in Beverly Hills.
I feel slothful already.
That was a great show, guys.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm Keith Reza.
And I'm Alan Lee.
All right. Thank you guys so much. See you next week.
See you next week.
You're listening to Reza Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.